Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nolm. I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to learn about how pomegranate and the nutrient NAC, or N-acetylcysteine, is showing extremely positive neuroprotective effects. This is from University of Malaysia. What does it mean? I'll go into that into some depth. Also today, how having plants, you know, flowering plants, ivy plants, in your home can improve the psychology during the lockdown. University of Seville in Spain. Also discuss how climate change is hurting children's diets and what we can do about that. I'll also discuss today about how citrus flavonoids boost the endothelial function and heart health. This is the University of Reading, which is in the United Kingdom, meaning how do oranges and kumquats and lemons, limes, grapefruit, etc. How does eating those really help heal our arteries, the epithelial function? So that's good. That can save some lives. And also today I'll discuss how fatty acids can help combat multiple sclerosis. New study out of Yale University, published in the Journal of Clinical Investigations. We're going to discuss that and how, from the University of Bath in the United Kingdom, how fish oil supplements benefit reaction time, mood, and skeletal muscle recovery, and more in athletes. So if you're an athlete, and many of you are, in fact, I've had the pleasure of training with and running over, I believe it's now 80 marathons over the last 45 years with tens of thousands of listeners who've come to our running clinics in Central Park every Sunday. So we were using the omega-3 fatty acids before they became a popular, you know, superfood. So that's why a lot of you look and feel a lot younger than your chronological age. More on that. And then living near trees may prevent vascular damage from pollution. Well, that's good. University of Louisville, published in the American Journal of Physiology, Heart and Circulatory Physiology. And keep in mind, all of the information on health shared on this program, you can find referenced in the PubMed, the government's official publication, a peer-reviewed literature. So you're getting the best of the best. It's not unsupported. It's fully supported. But that's just for part of the show. The next part of the show after that is a gentleman, I don't know his age, but I'm guessing he's in his 80s. He calls himself the old man in a chair. In point of fact, he's a highly esteemed and respected physician, board certified, who was a part of the health services of the Great Britain. And now that he's retired, he gives us his insight. And today he's going to talk about the cancel culture and why you should be very concerned about it. And finally, for about half of our program today, we're going to be talking with Danny Sheehan, one of the most important constitutional lawyers out there. And I'm going to be asking Danny about the danger of having one group of people control the executive, the legislative branch, and about to control the judiciary because they intend to stack more justices on the Supreme Court, and they already control the media, and they are controlled by the big tech firms. So, my goodness, where's their check and balance? So whatever they want, no matter how arcane or absurd, no matter how dangerous their legislative actions are, they'll get away with it. They'll protect themselves and try to propagandize why bad choices should be taken with a smile by the rest of the public. So that's our program. Let's begin with the latest on health and healing. Now, the first thing I want to mention is that a lot of these things I mentioned you could actually do yourself. For example, in most of America, you could grow pomegranate. But if you can't grow pomegranate, you can certainly buy them frozen, year-round, organic, or you can buy the concentrate. But here's what it's saying about pomegranate and N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, that when you consume these become functional foods. They function in the body. And they included dates and raw honey with that as well. And it protects your neurons. It protects your brain. It helps turn off inflammation in the brain. And that's a good thing. Additionally, from University of Seville having plants at home, and really aromatic plants. And these are easy to get. You can put them in an apartment. You can put them in a studio apartment. If you have a house, you can build a aromatic garden outside your windows. And at nighttime, you open your window, especially in the spring, summer, and early fall, and they blossom, and in comes lilac, lavender, honeysuckle, any of the ones that you've grown, the aromatics, roses. It's wonderful to have that. Well, doing that improves your psychological well-being, just having the plants you can see and nurture and take care of, and then having the aroma of them, that's an extra bonus. So if you're spending a lot of time indoors, get yourself loaded up with plants, and that'll help you. From the University of Vermont comes a study. In fact, it was from 19 nations involved in the study. And it's saying because the higher temperatures, the rising heat, it is creating such arid conditions that it's leading to water shortages in lots of the world, including California, Colorado, Kansas, and also Texas and South Dakota, all clear down to New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming. These places are in a severe drought. In fact, much of that is what they're calling a drought that could last 40 to 400 years. But that's in the United States. And we're fortunate because if something doesn't grow in one state, you can probably get it grown from another state. But what if you're not able to have that luxury? You're living in a country, let's say Egypt, that's running out of water. They have no water, none, zero, not a drop of their own water. They're getting water that is in this in the Nile, but that's now being taken off based upon this great dam that was built above them. So they're having all kinds of problems. They'll have water wars over there. But all over the world, Cape Town, South Africa, out of water. Sydney, Australia, out of water. The fifth largest city in India, out of water. And that water's not coming back. These aquifers are gone forever. In fact, they have to bring over 200 long trains of water cars into that community because they got like 6 million people living there. So every drop of water every day has come from what is brought in. Not good. So that means you can't grow a lot of things. That means that in that whole area of Syria and Iraq, you have massive drought. So that means that children, poor children in particular, are vulnerable to malnutrition. In Africa, lots of malnutrition because they have a reduced diet quality. So I think it would be important for us to educate ourselves about what can we do to help hungry children throughout the world. And I don't mean help by sending in some non-fat dry milk that generally is what they do, or some processed foods that are nutritionally dead, but really go in there and set up greenhouses and hydroponic houses that will help them grow food 12 months a year that is nutritious and that will help their body's immune systems, rich in vitamin A and vitamin C, etc. We could do that. If anyone in this audience belongs to the UN, and I've had people high up in the UN listen, come over, and I've given them stuff. I'll be happy to share a program that I created over 30 years ago of how to help with food sustainability from around the world. All you have to do is ask, and I'll be happy to share it with you if you are a person that can actually cause something to happen from it. Polyphenols are a very important part of what keeps our skin healthy and our immune system strong. And you find them in citrus fruits. Now, a new study from the University of Reading shows that it's extremely important to have this group of polyphenols if you have high-fat meals, because that leads to cardiovascular disease. But if you're flooding your body with polyphenols by eating or juicing and drinking a citrus juice or citrus fruit throughout the day, it exerts an impairment in getting that fat to be dangerous, because normally fat will really play havoc with your blood vessels, and that can ultimately lead to endothelial dysfunction and the risk of developing cardiovascular disease. So according to the British Journal of Nutrition, that consuming flavonone-rich orange juice or grapefruit juice with a meal may counteract these detrimental transient effects and support heart health in healthy middle-aged people. Important to do. Something simple, that's not difficult to do. Also, from Yale University comes a study, and this study is about how we can combat multiple sclerosis. Well, this is just one piece of the puzzle. And by the way, this is published in the Peer Review Journal of Clinical Investigation. The abnormal immune system response that causes multiple sclerosis by attacking and damaging the central nervous system can be triggered by a lack of a specific fatty acid in fat tissue. And the findings suggest that dietary change might help treat some people with the autoimmune disease. Fat tissue in patients diagnosed with multiple sclerosis lack normal levels of oleic, that's O-L-E-I-C, acid, that's a monounsaturated fatty acid, found in high levels in cooking oils, in beef and chicken and pork and cheese. But you want to get the olive oil to get your fatty acids, avocados to get your fatty acids, walnuts and almonds, cashews and pistachios to get your fatty acids. And if you're getting enough of the oleic acids, then you're not going to have as much of this loss of the metabolic sensors that activate T cells that mediate the immune system's response to infectious disease. I just misspoke one time here. It is a deficiency of oleic acid, and what the plant-based foods you're getting your fatty acids are good for you, but the animal fats, you're getting a lot of arachidonic acid, which is bad for you. That's your beef, chicken, and pork that I mentioned. You don't want to use the cooking oils. The only oils you should use in cooking are, I would use the following oils for cooking: macadamia nut, coconut oil, and mustard seed oil, because they can withstand high heat without being altered. Any other oil I wouldn't use, not even olive oil or grapeseed oil. I'd use those at low heat or at the end of a cooking process. Or if you want something really good, when you make your next soup, after you're making your soup, a tomato soup or whatever you're making, put in a tablespoon of olive oil or grapeseed oil. And then you're getting your oleic acids, and that can help you, especially with multiple sclerosis. And from the University of Bath, which is in the United Kingdom, fish oil supplements benefit you. If you're an athlete, you'll get higher skeletal muscle recovery. Your mood will be better, and you'll have a faster reaction time. That's good news. And also, living near trees or planting trees outside prevents vascular damage from pollution. That's good. So we need to plant trees. Now, plant the trees that you want, but an abundance of green vegetation around where you live can offset the negative effects of air pollution on blood vessel health. That's what this is saying, and that's good news. And also street trees, just trees up and down your block, close to your home, can reduce the risk of depression. That's the German Center for Integrative Biodiversity Research in the University of Leipzig. So get trees. Get them on your block. Get them in your backyard. Wherever possible, get into another environment. And by the way, I'm going to be doing a webinar in 2 weeks Sunday at noon on this very topic. Where are the best places in America to live? And how can I earn a living off the grid? How can I get off the grid? How can I get away with all this hate politics? Where are the best places in the world to live? Brand new webinar. Probably be 2 to 3 hours long. You can go to prn.fm, prn.fm. And there'll be information that takes you to that webinar. So that's 2 weeks Sunday. So for all of you who've gone through anxiety and wondering, what do? I don't like where I'm at. The whole New York City, for example, is just, it's an extraordinarily unsafe place. Just yesterday, a whole gang of teens knocked one guy out and hurt him badly. I don't know if they killed him or not. But it was just a random attack in broad daylight. That's not uncommon now. So quality of life, which used to be spectacular in New York City, is no longer there and won't be coming back anytime soon. But that's also true in a lot of cities. So people are saying, Where could I move if I don't want to be mandatorily vaccinated? I'm going to answer all these. What can I do to not be a victim of the Great Reset? Where are progressive communities? Where are intentional communities? So go to prn.fm. We have it posted there for the webinar coming up. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come back with the doctor in a chair. But before we do, just one quick thing here. I'll be doing the only retreat for the year, and it's going to be a very powerful retreat, and because it's dealing with anti-aging, but for some people, it's just relaxation. If you're coming just to enjoy a de-stressed, very happy, upbeat, positive, joyful 1 week or 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of April, good for you. That's a fundraiser for this station. But if you're coming because you want to be on an accelerated anti-aging study, good for you, because this will be the last one I'm doing. This is the confirmatory study from the one I did just 4 months ago, which was enormously successful. It's from people ages 35 to 70. So if you want to help yourself de-age, if you want to see all the science going on around the world, hear some of the most provocative lectures, some of the deepest meditations and yoga, some of the most empowering exercise, the great foods and juicing and supplements and counseling, all that will happen during the two-week period. And I know a lot of people are looking in the mirror thinking, wow, yeah, it's time. I paid attention to my own health, my own aging. A lot of times people don't even think about their health or aging until they start seeing how much of it they've lost. Then they get depressed, then they get anxious, then they start doing all kinds of things to the body they really shouldn't do. And I'm saying, let's do it right. Let's take years, decades off our chronological age. Meaning, if we're 60, 50, 40, let's reverse our biological age and be our biological age. No longer think of ourselves as a chronological age. So if someone says, how old are you? Instead of saying 43, you'll say, I'm 31 biologically. Can we do it? We've already done it. So it's an important time for you. Make a decision that you want to be as young as you can be by being around a supportive team, a great group of people come together for our staff from all walks of life, medical board certified physicians and nurses and therapists. So you get the best of the best in one of the most beautiful places in America. I'm going to give you a number to call, and you can call this number and say, yes, I want to be a part of this. Now, again, there are two things going to go on there simultaneously. One of the things that's going on will be the 1 to 2 week retreat. Relax, detoxify, eat great food, listen to great lectures and conversations, and just chill out. Come back renewed and rejuvenated. But the other one is, it's real serious. Highly motivated people only for the anti-aging study. Give a call to this number. You'll be speaking with Lou Ampanissi, 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Now, at that retreat, I'll also be spending the lectures one day talking about the future as I see it, and how to get ahead of all these crises and conflicts and hate and violence and insecurity that we're faced with. What can we do in a realistic way? If you're single or married or have children, you don't know what to do. And unfortunately, the people in power are not going to help us. So let's help ourselves. Give Luann a call at 903-881-7008. We're going to take a break and come back with a doctor in a chair.
What's going to happen next? I can tell you that. A few years ago, in a book called The Games Afoot, I wrote that the Chinese government was giving people marks according to their behavior. The social engineering, citizens being ranked and rated according to their behavior, began just over a decade ago. The government, I wrote, will measure people's behavior in order to decide what services they're entitled to. Anyone who incurs black marks for traffic offences, fare dodging or jaywalking, will find that they're no longer entitled to the full range of public services and rights. Moreover, internet activity will also be used to assess behaviour. Individuals who do bad things on the internet or whose searches are considered questionable will find themselves black marked. Individuals who have responsible jobs will be subjected to enhanced scrutiny. Close quotes. It was called having a social credit score, and I wrote then that it was likely that Western governments would soon follow suit, and they're now doing so with great enthusiasm. It might not have obviously reached your town just yet, but it will. Oh, it will. China has led the way because the Chinese system is more efficient than anything the West can offer. The Chinese government has more control over everything. And the people don't have much control over anything. It works very easily. Everyone starts off with so many points, and a smart app on every phone measures behaviour and helps the authorities decide whether or not you're a good citizen. There are, of course, video cameras absolutely everywhere, watching to see whether you cross the road at the right time, smoke in public, throw down litter, or do anything considered antisocial or inappropriate. If you talk to the wrong sort of people, you'll find your rating goes down. Stand and talk to me, for example, and you'll be sure to get black marks. China has one camera for every two people now, and they're equipped with facial recognition technology that can pick an individual out of a football crowd in less time than it takes to say, surely they can't do that. Supermarket computers watch to see how much you spend on alcohol, cigarettes, sweets and fatty foods. You'll lose points if you spend too much on the wrong sort of food. Local authorities measure how much recycling you've put out, and cameras in the bins will tell computers how much food you've thrown away and how much excess packaging you've had to discard. Of course, social credit scores are already here in the West, and they've been introduced slowly. In the UK, for example, drivers of more expensive motor cars have to pay a special, massively increased tax to use a motor car on the roads. That's just a blatant punishment for spending a lot on a car. On the other hand, citizens who drive electric cars don't have to pay anything towards the building, maintenance and repair of roads. They're exempt from the tax because they are considered good citizens. Their cars use the roads just as much as cars which are powered with petrol or diesel, but they are exempt. Drivers of petrol or diesel-powered cars are punished for being bad citizens, and they too must pay ever-rising annual taxes for the roads. The system ignores the fact that electric cars have been proven to be no better for the environment than petrol or diesel-powered cars. And drive your car into a city and you'll have to pay a special penalty. If you live in a house that's bigger than you need, you'll be marked down and your taxes will rise. If you have spare rooms, you'll be punished. If you do a useful job and give money to charity, you'll get extra points. If you criticise the government, then you'll lose points. When you're away from home, the authorities will, of course, know where you are all the time. Indeed, if you behave badly, you won't be allowed to go far from home. If you haven't obeyed all the health regulations, you won't be allowed to travel on public transport, fly anywhere or go abroad. If your social credit rating goes down, you won't be able to borrow money, buy a house or book a decent room in a hotel. If your rating goes down too far, you won't be allowed to go into hospital. And if you get in by accident, they'll slam a do not resuscitate notice around your neck before you can say, what's that for? You'll receive bonus points if you live in a tiny, modern, poorly built flat with thin walls and absolutely no privacy, but you'll lose those points if you keep a pet or complain about absolutely anything. If you spend too much on clothes or shoes, your rating will go down, and saving money will mark you out as guilty of something or other, and you won't be able to hire a car, get a promotion at work, use a gym, or get your children into a school with textbooks. If you're a lot of trouble, you'll find that your internet speeds will slow to a crawl. And if you have your own business but talk back to council officials, you won't get any help with planning problems.
Something I think that we should be listening to. By the way, if my voice is coming across a little scratchy today, there's any static, that's because there's some internet static in our main studio out of New York. We're going to now go over and speak just in a moment with Danny Sheehan, but I just want to remind you that tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we have conversations with remarkable minds, how evolutionists hid the truth from our eyes, consciousness as the fundamental basis for the universe and its implications on wellness, health, and the future of medicine. Professor Donald Hoffman, professor of cognitive science, University of California at Irvine, will be on. That'll be a heady, heavy conversation, but a very interesting and original one. Now we go to my guest standing by, and he has been on before. He's always a favorite. He is Danny Sheehan. Danny is one of our nation's most important and influential constitutional and public interest lawyers. And during the past 45 years, he's handled such public interest cases as the Pentagon Papers, the Watergate break-in, Iran-Contra, the Silkwood murder case. And more recently, he represented the Native Nations at Standing Rock and handled the dismissal of a federal case against Chase Iron Eyes for inciting a riot and felony trespassing. He's the founder of the Romero Institute, which is a nonprofit public policy center in Santa Cruz, California. And more recently, he founded the New Paradigm Institute, which explores new pathways to world peace. And by the way, he was up at Harvard, and if it weren't for Danny, the Pentagon Papers would never have been published by the New York Times. He was the one who had the final go-to call, and he gave the call. Nice to have you with us again, Danny.
Good morning, Gary.
Danny, I'm concerned about several things. I'm going to lay out an overarching comment. My concerns, take it from there, all right?
Okay.
I'm concerned that those who say that they're against fascism, and we all should be, and many of us have been our whole lives, that they are actually promoting pro-fascist points of view. For example, they don't want your comments or your science or your knowledge or your expertise or even your opinion if it challenges anything on the official version of something. Now, it could be anything from vaccines that now you're a public enemy. And then they want to change free speech so your speech is limited. And they're not hiding this. They're saying it in the open. So if you say, I have had two children, both of my children were damaged because of vaccines they were given, one at birth, another, a young girl at age 14 was given the Gardasil vaccine, and now she's paralyzed for life. My new baby, I don't want to vaccinate, and then I'm told that I'm a bad parent. You know, and I should be turned into the state into Child Protective Services for abusing my child by not vaccinating it. And yet I've gone ahead and done over 10,000 hours of research, and here's why I am hesitant. No longer does that person have the freedom to a freedom of choice over what goes in their body. So this is fascism, and at its worst, when you decline to allow a person to have any sovereignty over their thoughts or their actions concerning their body. But that's also true of anything. If you go against 5G, if you go against GMOs, if you go against vaccinations, anything at all, you're now an enemy of the state. And now they're trying to make you a domestic terrorist. They're even equating, and I would never vote for Trump. I don't like a single thing about the man on any level. And yet, to say that 74 million Trump supporters should be deprogrammed, and then suddenly it's a talking words. And you know when everyone in the media is talking about deprogramming, they've been told to talk about deprogramming. Meaning, well, you mean deprogramming camps like the South Vietnamese people had to go through once that war was ended, or other people in China had to go through? Yes, deprogram them because they're dangerous. How dangerous? And then General McChrystal is equating people who voted for Trump as if they're Al-Qaeda. But they are the domestic version of ISIS. Oh, you mean a person voting for Trump would cut someone's head off? No. No, this is insane. This is creating a new cultural war. And then everything is racist today. Everything. This is race baiting at its worst. And therefore, if you're not with them, you're the enemy. And therefore, they can destroy your reputation using Wikipedia. The New York Times no longer allows a challenge to any of its misinformation. So everywhere I look, I see the existence of reining in and canceling people who have a point of view that differs from the prevailing dogma. Increased surveillance and monitoring of people's political allegiances and the like. Wanting to make a list of everyone that voted for Trump and then go through, make a profile on every single one. I know a lot of people voted for Trump who were unionists, who voted Democrat for decades. But then when everyone that they voted for did not support what they promised with actions, they finally said, I've had enough being lied to and manipulated. And so they voted for Trump out of anger and just as a protest against the Clinton lies, the Obama lies, and everything else. Now they're the enemy. And so when they protest on any level, it's outrage. But when those who support the regime in power protest, it's always peaceful, no matter how many dead, burned people there are, how many buildings burned, how many businesses destroyed, including minority businesses. None of that happened. It's all being whitewashed. So I'm seeing us go from a society that has made enormous progress in all levels to one that is now going purely dystopian. Those are my personal views. And people can say they're subjective, but then challenge me, and I'll show you where we can go into each one of them and see this. I'm seeing our greatest writers no longer have a place to write, no longer have a place to publish. I'm seeing John Pilger, and I'm seeing Chris Hedges, and I'm seeing Glenn Greenwald and Abby Martin and others attacked. Glenn Ford at the with Black Agenda Reports, you never see him interviewed. He's one of the smartest people on race relations and the history of race relations I've ever met. When was the last time you saw him? You don't. So if you are on the wrong side of this issue, you are now to be attacked and destroyed. And we have no checks and balances now. All power belongs to one group, and this group has a history. Just look at what they've done in the past, and you're going to see what they're going to do in the future. Show me where I'm wrong on any of these points of view, and what you see is happening from your perspective. The forum is yours, Danny.
Well, this it's always a pleasure, Gary, to be here, because it's extraordinary to watch what's happening right now. While on the one hand, people who are liberals and progressives, and we'll discuss the difference between these two particular political groups in a minute, but everybody's kind of happy right now that that Donald Trump is removed from the scene, gone from the scene by some 6 to 7 million votes. Popular votes have asked him to step aside and have invited in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and their sort of neoliberal community that has arisen after the end of the Cold War. This new Democratic leadership conference, kind of new, more moderate Democratic Party. And what we're hearing, the trope that we're hearing more and more now is moderate. Let's get the moderates in. And they're using the fear and actual hostility that had developed against Donald Trump and some of the more extreme racist and nationalist and white supremacist people. They're using the hostility that was legitimately generated against some of the things that they were doing to basically equate it to people that are progressives. My opinion is that there's a great deal of recklessness right now that's going on, that you're referencing it. The liberals and neoliberals are being reckless about trying to tamp down any type of what they view to be, quote, extreme positions. And they're equating left positions to right positions on the political spectrum, and that they're they're painting everybody who is not a moderate with the same sort of calcined brush that these people are all extremists. And they have to be tamped down. They have to be restricted in their access to the internet. They need to be censored. They need to be canceled. This is an extraordinarily dangerous time. The danger that was presented by Donald Trump of reckless disregard for the truth, the blatant lying, the attempt to misuse the instrumentalities of the power of the presidency and the executive branch in a self-serving and reckless way. Okay, what I'm saying is that we're faced now with a different danger, a much more subtle danger than the very real danger that Donald Trump represented. And I don't know where exactly I got lost on the radio connection here or the internet connection, but the bottom line is that the danger that was represented by Trump was conscious lying, manipulation, the so-called gaslighting constantly, the misuse of the instrumentalities of power of the executive branch to foster and promote the interests of the major corporations like the pharmaceutical industry and the oil and gas industry and others. But the rush and the excitement about getting rid of that type of danger has been replaced by a danger now where everybody wants to get everybody in the country back to being a moderate, as if that were always true. That get everybody back to sort of the same kind of comfort level that the white people and the majority of people had back during the 1950s. Wouldn't it be wonderful to get back to that? But what they're talking about is getting everybody back to the normal that would have been instituted if Hillary Clinton had won the 2016 presidential election, where, as I was mentioning before we lost our signal, that, you know, where Hillary Clinton is meeting behind closed doors, getting, you know, $250,000 to do a special seminar for the people at Goldman Sachs and telling them secretly that you guys are the ones that know about the economy. If I'm elected, I'm going to let you guys run the economy, meeting with major bankers, meeting with the heads of the pharmaceutical industry, making certain that the healthcare system in our country is not a healthcare system really at all, but it's a system working with the American Medical Association and the pharmaceutical industry to treat just symptoms. That type of normal is what they're talking about. And now what's happened is that because of the rise of the internet and these major corporations like Facebook and Google and Twitter, where the masses of people, the huge majority of people in the country, are able, if they choose to use those facilities responsibly, are able to talk with each other directly, share their ideas that are unfiltered, to organize movements, etc. I knew from the instant that I saw the onset of the internet arising back years ago, I said, whoa, you know, the government, the state, is going to try to get its nose right into the middle of this particular technology, and they're going to be using it to monitor everybody. They're going to be using it to surveil everybody. They're going to be using it to censor everybody. They're going to try to get restrictions on what people can say and do in there, and they're going to use the most hot button, emotional laden issues to try to do that. For example, child pornography. Well, nobody wants to have child pornography going on over the internet, so therefore you have to allow the government to monitor everything everybody's saying and doing. But they passed a thing like Section 230, this bill that Congress passed, giving Facebook and Google and the other internet platforms special exemption from the normal libel and slander laws, saying that we're going to treat you as though you were just like a telephone company, that, you know, you're not responsible for what people are saying. So you cannot be sued for promulgating a libelous or slanderous statement. But at the same time, Congress is going to impose a whole series of burdens on you, Facebook and Internet and others, as a condition for granting you this special exemption from the libel and slander laws for things that you rebroadcast. But we're going to insist that you follow certain rules with regard to what you allow to go on over your network. That this is extraordinary. And they start out by saying, well, of course, nobody wants to have child pornography on the Internet, so we're going to prohibit from allowing child pornography to go on over your platform as a condition to giving you this special privilege. But in addition to that, we're going to delegate to you this authority to exercise this responsibility for moderating. That's the term that they use, moderating the content of what's being said. And so this is basically an effort on the part of the neoliberal moderates, you know, middle marginalists, you know, to get everybody brought into the center. Let's get everybody talking to each other. Let's get everybody agreeing. Let's get the regular Republicans, not the people that are extreme right. Let's get the moderate regular Republicans talking to the moderate regular Democrats that are sort of there in the center of the political spectrum. But anybody who drifts too far to the right or too far to the left, we're going to allow you, Facebook, Google, Twitter, others, to exercise your special authority that you've been given via Section 230 here of this statute passed by Congress to exempt you from normal libel and slander laws. We're going to impose upon you this obligation to moderate the content of what's being said. And that the moderation is not just with regard to sexual issues or obscenity, but it's also substantive content, political content, worldview content. And these examples that you've given, Gary, that everybody knows about, the vaccine discussions, the discussions about 5G, the discussions about GMOs, the discussions about all kinds of things. And that category is expanding weekly now. And the fact that that's one thing. An additional thing is they're saying that, look, as a condition for us granting you this kind of extraordinary privilege to be exempt from libel and slander laws, you're going to be required to allow us as the government to get access to virtually all the information that you're gathering and storing. You go ahead and gather all this information about the people that are using your platform, where they are when they're doing it, what things they're buying, what things they're talking about. You know, you monitor these people, and you make that available to us as the government. We wouldn't be allowed to do that, of course, as the government, they're saying, because it would violate the Fourth Amendment right of privacy. But you guys, as a private entity, a private corporation, setting aside the fact that they're created by the state, but you as a private entity, you know, you're allowed to go ahead and do that. In fact, you're obliged to go ahead and do that as a condition for us granting you this privilege. And so, therefore, what we're seeing happening is the state is getting itself positioned right now to be able to have access to virtually all of your information. And these technologies are now becoming more and more invasive. They actually have these machines in your house now, this little speaker, where you can just turn around and talk to it. And it's not Siri, it's some other woman's name they use, and they say, oh, Siri, what time is it? And they'll tell you, the machine will say, oh, you know, it's 9:45 a.m. Pacific time. They'll say that, and which means they're listening to you all the time. You know, you start having a conversation with your friend in your living room about your interest in potentially taking a summer vacation, and all of a sudden on your internet starts appearing all of these advertisements for places to go for your vacation in the summertime. And regular people are saying, oh, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that terrific that they have this service now that they can actually monitor what you're thinking and what you're planning to do? They're ignoring the fact that all of this information is being stored. Now that they have the technology of storing trillions of bits of audio information in their computers on these little silicon chips, the key is that they're making all that available to the government. And the standards that the government is purporting to have to meet in order to get at that, even Obama said, oh, yeah, look, we're monitoring and listening to all your phone calls and recording them, but we can't go in and look at them unless we get a warrant. And then you say, oh, a warrant, what is that? But it's not a warrant that there's probable cause to believe that you've committed any specific crime or that you've said any specific thing that they're searching for. What they do is they've set up a special court, this FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, where they're saying, oh, there are these terrorists going on around the world, this al-Qaeda and all these other people who are really upset about the fact that we've invaded and occupied their Middle Eastern oil fields and their holy land, and that these people are threatening us. So what we've got to do is we've got to be able to have a special FISA court for foreign intelligence surveillance, and we get to use it even against citizens inside the United States, and that the standard is not whether or not we have specific probable cause to believe that any particular crime has been committed and that there's evidence of that crime that is there in that narrow place we want to look at. Instead, they have a completely different standard, which is all they have to do in order to get a FISA warrant is to be able to have an articulable suspicion that information that is relevant to the national security of the United States might possibly be discussed, okay? And out of the some 35,000 applications, I believe it is, for FISA warrants, they've only denied two of them. You know, what I'm saying now is that this age of technology, this communication technology, has come upon us, you know, so suddenly, basically in the last 25 years, and that the promogenitors of this technology now are working hand in glove with the government, the federal government now, to not only provide this extraordinary apparent luxury to everybody, the regular citizenry, to be able to get on the internet and talk to your friends and send photos back and forth and have live videotapes. You can run your own little show if you want from your own living room. You can set up your computer, and over your computer you can broadcast your views to the world, etc. But in exchange for that, the government of the United States is now penetrating the most sacred areas of privacy in your whole life, and they're recording them, and they're getting access to them. And more importantly, if you could think of anything more important, they're using that information. They're not just storing it. They're using it, and they're figuring out what it is you like, what it is you go, what your proclivities are. And what they're doing is they're feeding back through these private companies, Facebook and Twitter and Google, etc. They're feeding back to you information on your computer that is designed to manipulate you, to get you to actually do certain kind of things that they want you to do, under the auspices of getting you directed towards buying products that the people who sponsor these Facebook sites and these internet sites, that's how they make their money. They sell your information to advertisers and to companies that want to flog their product.
You are correct, Danny, but isn't it worse that they can actually influence and have elections? Wasn't it shown in a congressional testimony by America's leading professor on this that over 10,000 votes were, through algorithm manipulation, went to Hillary Clinton instead of to Donald Trump? I don't care who a person votes for, but I do care about the government working with the social media platforms to control our behavior. For example, if you go against vaccines, there's no place on the internet now with the major platforms you're allowed to be there. In fact, you're attacked for being a danger to society, a selfish person. And we even have from the Annenberg School out in California, they had a class on teaching people how to manipulate the anti-vaccine people or the vaccine choice people, which is a more accurate statement, to being pro-vaccine. So when universities are now involved in convincing people there's only one right and you must follow it, and the media censors you, that's also a part of this whole discussion, is it not?
There's what's peculiar about this is that and dangerous about this is that the neoliberals, these new more moderate Democrats for the most part, are now attempting to undertake to expand the definition of terrorism, and that the and we knew it when they were doing it, when they were brushing aside all of these constitutional concerns about spying on people that they designated as terrorists, you know, allowing them to ultimately kill them, you know, just by a president deciding we're going to kill this person because we view them to be a threat to the national security of the United States. And that's Obama was doing it, you know, authorizing airstrikes and drone strikes on them and their families, you know, to blow up their entire house and kill them and their entire progeny, you know, because the national security state people deemed them to be terrorists. Now, they may or may not have been a terrorist. And it's not a question of, well, as long as they get the right people, it's okay. Because, you know, the whole concept of our Constitution, the very first thing that you learn about the Constitution is that it's not designed to protect guilty people, and it's not designed just to protect innocent people. You know, what it is that the principle of allowing the state to do certain kinds of things, they will always abuse it. They will always abuse it. People who are put into positions of power will inevitably abuse that power. And what they've discovered, for example, with these foreign intelligence surveillance warrants that they're issuing, once they had the power to get these kind of warrants, they were seeking these kind of warrants against people who they suspected of regular crimes, not foreign terrorism or anything, but, you know, robbing a bank, or, you know, stealing somebody's wallet, or threatening to kidnap somebody. You know, these are crimes that are normal common law crimes, and they were using this extraordinarily unique source of power that they garnered unto themselves to be able to do surveillance against terrorists, and they're using them against regular criminals and people they suspect of crime. Now what they're doing, of course, is they're using them against people who they think hold suspicious beliefs, that they're outside of the mainstream, that they're too extreme. They're either extreme to the left or extreme to the right, and they're now characterizing these people as a threat to the national security and the calm and moderation of the state. This stuff is inevitable, and this is what the constitutionalists were saying, that you just simply, as a matter of principle, cannot allow this kind of power to be taken by the state. We set up the federal government with a specific intent of it having limited powers, that they were to only specifically delegated power that went to them. It was very different from, completely contrary to, the normal concept of the sovereign, you know, the kings in royalty of Europe, that our federal government was a government of specifically narrowly limited delegated powers that were specified in the Constitution. And any effort on the part of the government actors to exercise other powers, which they profess to be inherent in a sovereign, you know, it just smokes of authoritarianism. And you've got to be careful about that. And this is what is happening right now, because there has been such a bad individual that ended up winning the Republican nomination because of, we talked about this on previous shows, of the Republican Party being so certain back in 2016 that Hillary Clinton was going to be the coronated candidate for the Democratic Party, in that they would, the Democratic National Committee would steamroll Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren or anybody else that was not Hillary Clinton. They were so certain that was going to happen that they altered the procedure by means of which they were to select their Republican presidential nominee. And so rather than allowing of the 13 candidates that they had running for the Republican nomination, rather than dividing up the delegates that were available in the primary process in a given state proportionately to the amount of the percentage of votes that each candidate got.
Danny, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. We look forward to another conversation to continue this. I'm very concerned when a member of Congress just wants to pass a new law that anyone challenging the government should be considered an enemy terrorist. Danny Sheehan, my guest. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.